Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Successful media and public affairs consultant, accomplished entrepreneur and national writer and contributor, attorney who served in the Missouri House of Representatives, worked in the White House and CNN, thought leader, entrepreneur, and host who takes the conversation to the next level.
Prepare to get rare access to fascinating guests.
You're connected. You have the it factor. You've joined
Grill Nation.
Everybody over there.
Get a hold of. Everybody up there.
Get into it.
Ooh-way.
Connect with Jason on Twitter at Jason Grill. Connect with the show on Twitter at Grill Nation Show. And online at grillnationshow.com.
Welcome your host of Grill Nation. Always dressed up and ready to go, even in a radio studio. Here's Jason Grill.
Hello and welcome to the Grill Nation Show. I'm your host, Jason Grill. I appreciate you joining us today on 980 AM and also on iTunes via podcast and at grillnationshow.com. We are going to have a fun show today. I'm excited to have on one of our contributors to the Grill Nation Show. We'll get to him in just a second. Before we start, I want to thank our title sponsors of the show. They are Truss, MoBank, BLK Financial, and Two West Advisors in Ryan Rink. As I mentioned, we have contributors to the Grill Nation Show as well and guest host and on-air contributors. They are the Rieger and Jay Rieger & Co., Ryan Mabey, KCADC, Kansas Area Development Council, and today's contributor, guest co-host, partner of the show, Brian Sarf with True Wealth & Company. Their website is retirewithtrue.com. Brian comes on each and every month on the show and always brings on an awesome guest. We have a lot of fun, and we learn a lot about what they're doing and also ways that they can help you and make your life even better. So I want to bring in Brian Sarf from True Wealth & Company to introduce our guest today. It's going to be a lot of fun. Brian, how are you today?
Hey, great, buddy. Thanks for having me here. Looking forward to a phenomenal show.
It's always fun the first week of the month you come in. I love it.
Yeah, last month we had JJ on for Jasper's.
Dude, that tore one it blew up. That one blew up. Yeah. Man, that was a fun show.
Yeah, he's fun there. I've been really looking forward to visiting with Pascal Hinn. Her and I booked this a few months ago, and I've worked with Pascal for a number of years. She's just been a phenomenal strategic partner for our business, helped a lot of people get their legal affairs and their business law and corporate law in order. But Pascal she's got 20 years of experience in corporate and business law. She served with Fortune 500 multinationals, closely held small businesses, multi-generational family businesses, and growing startups. She has a phenomenal family, a great relationship with her husband on entrepreneurism, so it'll be a good viewpoint for us to talk through as well. She has her law degree from UMKC, the Kansas City School of Law, and her community involvement is just fantastic. As well, and we'll talk through that in the final segment. So I want to bring on the air, Pascal Hinn. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
It's great to have you. Okay, so tell us, Brian kind of gave you a flyover of your background, but sure. You grew up in Kansas City. From here?
No, I grew up northeast Iowa. So in this small town, Dubuque, Iowa.
Okay. I think that's a city we've all heard of.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. It's the gateway to the east. It's Wisconsin and Illinois. Had a really fun childhood. My dad was a farm kid from Iowa. My mom grew up in France. My dad met her while he was in the service over there. So I had this great mix where one summer I might be on my aunt and uncle's farm, and the next summer I was in the south of France. So
quite a cool childhood.
Yeah,
it sounds like
pretty awesome.
Very grateful to my parents. They really made an effort to give us kind of Midwestern solid values, as well as having spent about every third summer overseas.
Kind of gave you a different outlook on
absolutely.
The world and life.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Brian, so you came to Kansas City for law school. Is that how you got here?
I came to Kansas City. I graduated from University of Iowa.
Right.
And with a burning desire to teach high school in the inner city. So there is no inner city in Iowa, really. So I came and I did my student teaching at Schlegel High School, and then I worked at De La Salle in KCMO.
Great place.
And spent a couple of years working at alternative school. Really was passionate about education and investing in the inner city with at-risk youth. But to be frank, I got frustrated with the system, with the school system. So I decided I needed to go to law school to do something that I thought would have a more systemic effect. So I spent 3 years at UMKC Law School and quite naively graduated with a huge debt and realized that education was not going to pay my debt off. So being all serious as well is I really got the business bug when I was in law school. So I joined Morrison & Hecker, which is now Stinson, and really learned to practice and work in a big law firm. And then over the next 20, 25 years, spent time in-house with large corporate law departments, as well as with a boutique firm and in a large firm. And then about 5 years ago, decided it was time to do something else.
So how did you decide to become an entrepreneur and to open your own shop? Because I know how nerve-wracking that can be and the thoughts you go through. So talk through the pros and cons and what you thought about when you were launching.
Sure. So about 5 years ago, my husband has always been an entrepreneur since he came to the States when he was a young man. And he would always ask me, why do you not have your own shop? And I thought, well, that's scary, and I'm not sure if I would know, you know, if I could do that. In the meantime, I looked at what I really loved doing, and it was working with clients closely with strategy. And I did not see lawyers doing what lawyers do in-house on an outside basis with small, mid-sized companies. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, growth companies, small business, mid-market businesses need strategic legal more than any large companies that have the ability and the resources to hire firms dedicated to them or to grow in-house law departments. So I saw a niche in the market that I did not think was being well served. So the idea was if I could do an outsourced general counsel model and build a team of attorneys really that mimic what you would have in an in-house law department, and we could kind of, you know, pay as you play or play as you pay with mid-sized companies, we could give them very high-level legal strategic advice within their budget and but aligned with their business objectives. And what I didn't see is anybody really doing that effectively. And that's kind of how the idea was born.
What types of businesses do you work with on a day-to-day basis that you enjoy working with the most?
Sure. So we have really our sweet spot and where our passion is closely held businesses. So five owners or less. Usually it's a founder owner or a second generation. Sometimes it's, you know, an acquisition or somebody has been and rolling up a couple of companies strategically. But we really love entrepreneurs. It's the people that are up all night. You know, that they have the big idea, they are creators, they're innovators, they are passionate about what it is they're either buying, selling, or serving others for. And we have that same blood. So we are passionate about our clients. You know, sometimes we kind of joke because it's, you know, there's no boundaries because we know entrepreneurs. I get more emails on a Sunday night than I do on a Monday morning.
Yes, I do too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, we live and work the same way that entrepreneurs do. And for that reason, I believe we give good strategic advice aligned with their business interests within their budget because we want to partner.
It's going to be a great show today. Going to have a lot of fun. I really like where we've started off. Let's get more into the entrepreneurship angle.
Sure.
And again, how do you monetize this as an attorney when you're working with startups? I think that's real interesting as well. You're listening to the Grill Nation Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show. Thanks for joining us on 980 AM and on iTunes and podcast today. I appreciate you joining as well at grillnationshow.com, where you can find photos of our guests, all of our shows listed out with information about each of our guests, as well as our show sponsors and supporters. Pascal Hinn is with us today. Also, Brian Sarf, who is a Grill Nation Show partner. His website is retirewithtrue.com. If you you need help with your planning, financial advice, anything you need to make your life better.
If you want to make work optional.
Work optional.
That's what we do.
Talk to Brian.
That's what we do.
Why don't you start off, Brian? I know we were talking about entrepreneurship and what kind of clients that Pascal works with.
Entrepreneurship is just in my blood. It's what I love to do. It's what I love to talk about. It's a large part of our practice, of the clients that we work with, that come in and have businesses set up. So, I've worked with Pascal with a number of clients that she's helped along the way. And what do you see as the biggest mistakes that entrepreneurs are making? Maybe the top two or three that you see entrepreneurs making out in the workplace.
Sure. So I think most entrepreneurs think that they can do everything in their business, regardless of their skill set. And, we're very cognizant of budgets and the constraints that budgets bring. But I think the very skilled entrepreneurs know what they're good at, where their skill set lies, and when to bring in strategic partners and how to make that, monetize that, if you will.
Yeah. And how do you monetize it as a lawyer? I know, because a lot of startups in this community, you're just starting out, you need a lawyer. You maybe can't go to a huge law firm at that point. It's too high. The hourly fees are too high. So how do you kind of navigate that? I think that's real interesting, because you've been able to grow it very well.
To be honest with you, when I first started, it was all takers, bring them, bring everybody. And
very entrepreneurial of you.
Yes, exactly. We'll figure it out. We'll learn to serve everyone. And we still have that attitude. We still are very open to, when I started the firm, at least 10 to 20% of our time we dedicate to pro bono work. And that can be charitable, but it also can be young startups, young entrepreneurs, someone who aligns with our passion, our values, that we want to really invest in a meaningful way. But I'll tell you, what I did is I got better and better at judging who I think were going to be folks that we could help and that had really good ideas, had built out infrastructure, had the right personnel. It was really almost as an investor. The same vetting, if you will, that an investor goes through, we learned to kind of look for clients in that way. So when I first started, like I said, it was every client. And then I soon learned that not all clients necessarily match with what, the way we work. So the more selective we got in helping clients that we thought had built out a viable business that we could ride along with, because our goal was to partner. We want to partner with you where you are in your business cycle, because if you grow, we're going to be able to grow along with you. Mm-hmm. So
what are the talk about the different types of law that you practice, because you have multiple attorneys in your office.
Yep.
That it's not, you're not all things to all people,
no.
That you're all things to some.
Yeah.
And then you have attorneys in different areas. So talk about those strategic areas you've picked.
Sure, absolutely. So what I learned from being in a large firm and then also being in-house for a number of years is I wanted to choose attorneys that had practical in-house experience, because it's very different being an in-house lawyer. Because you don't get 2 weeks to create, to research and write up a memo that then you give to your client and you get to have this discussion about, proposed path forward. You have about 45 minutes because somebody's standing in your door and says, "Is this legal?" And you're like, "I don't know, but I'll find out." And you got a meeting in 45 minutes. I'll get you something. So you have to be able to think on your feet. You have to be practical. I joke that, our answer is never no, it's yes, but. I also have kind of a running joke with clients, so here's going to jail and here's making no money. You tell me where you want to be on the spectrum, because, those are the two extremes when you're giving legal advice. And so I wanted to build out a team that really, short of litigation, any business legal issue that came up, we would either be able to handle with our team, or we'd get you to somebody in very short order who could advise.
So companies that want to, they want to sell their business,
yeah.
You know, they want to possibly go public.
Yep.
Do you work in that area as well, right?
So
I
we
saw
do.
That on the website, yeah. I thought.
Mm-hmm. So we do corporate law, and by that I mean we form companies, we reorganize companies, we help structure. One of the things that small companies often don't realize is important is following some corporate form or having some kind of structure around decision making.
Mm-hmm.
Because often they're working so hard at making money that they don't pay a lot of attention to how decisions are made. And if partnerships start to become stressed, you can go back then later and wish that operating agreement that you got off LegalZoom had been customized to your needs. So we do corporate.
I see. Speaking of operating agreements, I can't tell you the number of entrepreneurs that I visit with that don't have anything in writing.
Yeah.
They're just running and going. It's all just in their name.
Yep.
And they're out there, and some are in high risk businesses, and they don't have an LLC set up to protect them. They don't have, you know, any legal documentation or operating agreements. They're not running with E&O. And that's where we, you know, we kind of call a timeout and say, yeah. All right, hold on. Number one on your list is you need to go sit down with Pascal and get these things in order,
yeah.
Because you're running around and it's just going to be one accident and now you're out of business and everything you have personally is now open to litigation and running everything dry.
Absolutely. And we see ourselves as both risk managers from a legal standpoint and a strategic standpoint, as well as helping them create opportunity. Because often I think entrepreneurs miss opportunity because they don't have structure in place, or they're taking unnecessary risks. To your point, Brian, it takes one bad lawsuit or it takes one bad, one bad incident that they're not legally protected from.
And not just the outside, of the inside.
Oh,
with
absolutely.
Partnerships and with
absolutely.
Co-founders and in this world, that's complicated.
Absolutely. Financial controls are key. And often, and I also kind of joke with clients. I said, you know, when you're putting a partnership together, it's like dating. So they're never going to look as good as they do right now. You know, you're getting married. So if we don't determine how you're going to resolve disputes and you wait until you have a dispute, that is the worst time to figure out how you're going to manage when you have conflict.
Yeah.
So if we can help them put those processes in place, as well as to your point, Brian, what do your buy sells look like? What does your operating agreement look like? What does your governance look like? How are you sharing revenue? How are you making financial decisions? That time spent up front is key to avoiding conflict or at helping resolve conflict, because we've also seen the value of business just plummet when you get into a conflict between partners. But to finish out I have a group of attorneys. All of us have general corporate in-house experience, but all of us have expertise. And that expertise includes HR advising, employment law advising. We have a strong franchisor and franchisee attorney in-house. We manage intellectual property and help protect, you know, trade secrets and manage brand and trademark. We also have, to the extent that real estate, commercial leases are involved in day-to-day operations, we do a lot of M&A work, merger and acquisition work, particularly transferring either wealth to a founder owner as they retire or having them acquire companies. We have partners that we help work with culture, because anytime you have an HR issue or you're doing merger and acquisition work, you're often going to find that the internal soft skills and soft issues might be the things that give you the most risk to the business.
Mm-hmm.
And your website is phbusinesslaw.com.
Yes. Yeah.
You're all in on the business law advisors. That's interesting.
Well, and
I love it.
That was very intentional.
Yeah.
So when I started the firm, one, I didn't want it to be about me. I wanted it to really be about the services and the model.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to be able to have the same experience a client would have an experience regardless if I was on the file or someone on my team or some combination. And really what was important to me is that we provide strategic advice. So law in a vacuum is not helpful to business owners, particularly entrepreneurs. So to the extent that there is a business legal issue, we see ourselves as an advisor, as a trusted partner, and it's our responsibility to give you good business advice as well as, you know, legal advice in that framework.
Jason, I'd like to, after the break that's coming up, I want to talk about the work life that Pascal has built for herself and her family, and how she's able to sit on the beach in Greece and still run her law practice in Kansas City, and talking about having a virtual and local presence in law. It's quite fascinating, and I know many of the fellow entrepreneurs out there dream of having a setup like that.
I think many attorneys dream of that, too. At least the ones I saw in court all the time when I was practicing a lot, especially the ones that were with me at 7 o'clock at the Smithfield Municipal Court or the Kansas City Municipal Court. And we're going to go to break in a second, but I like your outside general counsel as well, that branding. I've never heard that before. Yeah. I've never had seen it phrased like that.
And I hadn't either. And that's why I wanted to create the firm that did that.
Really interesting. Again, the website is phbusinesslaw.com. Pascal Hinn is with us, as well as Brian Sarf, who's with True Wealth and Company. Their website is retirewithtrue.com. Joins me each and every month, brings on great guests. We talk about fascinating subjects, and I'm excited to have another great show here today on The Grill Nation Show on 980 AM. We're going to be right back from break here in a second. We're going to talk more with Pascal Hinn. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show. I'm your host, Jason Grill, 980 AM and on iTunes and podcast and at grillnationshow.com. Joined today again by one of my guest co-hosts and partners of the Grill Nation Show, Brian Sarf with True Wealth and Company. The website is retirewithtrue.com. Pascal Hinn is with us as well today. She is an awesome law firm here in Kansas City. We need to make sure we let people know that's Missouri and Kansas.
Yes.
You can serve people in both states. phbusinesslaw.com. And Brian's going to start us off. We really want to get talking to you about that work-life balance here, because it's every attorney's dream, every entrepreneur's dream, everyone's dream, basically, is how do you do that? And Brian helps people with that every day.
Well, and it's just what you want to build as an entrepreneur, because if you just stay, you know, nose to the grindstone, you don't take any vacation, you don't take any free time, and you don't schedule it, you'll burn yourself out. I learned it from Dan Sullivan. You know, strategic coach out of Chicago, and now he has an office up in Toronto and LA, and his advice is you have to schedule your free days at the beginning of the year of what days are you going to take off that are your free days? What days are going to be your power days that you're going to get a ton of work done, and those are going to be your high days? And what days are your cleanup days in between where you're able to get paperwork done and follow up on all the other things that hit your plate? And knowing when you come out of the shoot every week, where those days fall. And then when you're on your free day, you're on your free day. You're not on your free day on your laptop with your family at Disney World trying to get some work done. That you've got to plan through that. And so the balance that Pascal has and what she's been able to build in her life has always been an inspiration for me. And I just wanted her to share, you know, her story from her mentor, Nancy, and how she got to the point of making that switch and starting to build this balance that she has today.
Sure.
When was that magic moment?
So I look back, lawyers, you know, entrepreneurs by either self-selection or by personality, hard charging, work all the time, very driven, very focused. Mm-hmm. So there was a time in, it would have been 2002. I was 8.5 months pregnant. I was in New York City. This was in the night. Oh, it was 2002. I didn't have a laptop, so I am hauling banker's boxes full of documents for a deposition. And I'm in New York City, and all of a sudden, and my doctor would have killed me if she'd have known I'd flown.
Are you jumping in a cab at this point?
Oh yeah, I'm trying to talk this cabbie into helping me, you know, and so I'm trying to schlep these boxes, and I got a deposition. And I realized it was one of those moments, and I thought, what am I doing? I'm going to have a baby in New York City just solely because I was stubborn and I decided I needed to take this deposition.
I'm like picturing this in my mind. I have the whole photo right now.
And the stress just had to have been.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, it was one of those clear moments, and I realized my daughter was about 2.5, and I had not seen her awake for about 4 or 5 days, maybe a week. Mm-hmm. And I would leave in the morning before she was up. I'd come home at night, and she was in her crib. And I'm pregnant with my second, and I am risking my health and his, really, if I was honest about it, purely because I felt that if I missed this deposition, then I wasn't going to get to go to trial. And if I didn't go to trial, I wasn't going to grow my career and all of that. And that was really the beginning of making a commitment to work-life balance. So I was practicing in a litigation firm at that time. I came back and I reconnected with a woman who had been a partner at my first law firm, by the name of Nancy Shellady. She's still now she's at CenturyLink. She's running some department because Nancy, you know, that's how Nancy's always running something, but she was an incredible mentor to me, and pushed me to be highly, ambitious and focused, but also there's just an unwritten rule that family's always first. And what I find, particularly with entrepreneurs, is we are very good at certain things and we do not at the same time prioritize our health. You know, we don't eat the way we should. We don't get in the gym the way we should. We don't sleep the way that we should. We often, by default, deprioritize the most important people in our family. And I mean, there's a joke among lawyers. It's like, which marriage are you on? I'm not sure I know any lawyers that aren't divorced.
Or how many therapists do you have? Have you conquered alcoholism yet?
Absolutely.
It's like one of the most prevalent in any career there is.
Highest number of alcoholics are lawyers.
Yeah.
By profession. So,
But I think a lot of that comes out of when you look at a lot of the corporate structures that exist, that the corporation's first. That, you know, if you get an email at 5:30, you're expected to have an answer
back.
You're working late at night. I know that all of my friends that are working at corporations across the country, you work late at night, you work weekends, you work mornings.
Yep.
You got your emails in your pocket on your phone all the time.
Yep.
And you're expected to get back. And it's no longer, you know, when I began my career without cell phones and those things years ago that, you know, you would just. You know, you had your work during the day that you took care of, and the next morning you'd handle it. But now it's like if you get an email at 7 or 8 o'clock at night and I don't tell somebody that I received it, then they're upset in the morning. They're calling me going, why didn't you answer my email? Well, I'm at home. I had volleyball with my daughter.
Yeah.
It was her birthday and on and on and on. And sometimes we forget in this world to get that immediately. And I think that coming out of the corporate world, you were in a pretty – you know, tight structure of what you were running and very regimented, and your husband really was a force in your life to say, hey, we need to take a break
and
get out of here.
We're going to do this differently. And to your point, Brian, you know, especially as attorneys, but it's not limited to attorneys. You either have a corporate, you know, you either have a, especially executives or professionals, you have a corporate option, or with lawyers, you have a firm option. And I did not see the other thing that I am very committed to is creating an environment, particularly for women, because what I saw is that female attorneys within 7 years, statistics are that in 7 years, the majority of female attorneys are off partnership track because they opt out because they're usually, you know, professional couple. Both hard charging. By that time, you've had a couple kids. And for families to stay together, you have to have some balance. And so traditionally, you choose one of you to take lead. And that is often the husband, you know, if it's a husband and wife situation. Or women just find that you pick up and you take on, you know, it doesn't matter if you have a nanny, doesn't matter if you have a house cleaner. You're still figuring out which permission slips need to get signed. You know, you're still managing kids or you're managing other things in your life. So, and what I'm very encouraged about, and, you know, going back to being pregnant, 8.5 months pregnant, both times when I was pregnant, I was the first female attorney, in my department or in my firm to take maternity leave because they hadn't they hadn't had one before. So
how'd that work out?
Exactly. So I got to go in and negotiate, you know, and and you know, I can tell stories all day long about, you know, I was back on the road after 4 weeks after my daughter was born.
Wow.
You know, and because it's, if you want to be a player,
yep,
you had to step up.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I am very committed to, and the reason that I've built the firm the way I have, and it happens to be all women, I wanted to create an environment where people could honor their families, they could honor their own health and wellness, and they could also be excellent, competent lawyers. So I've actually built a bench that we have redundancy in every law, in every area of law, and every attorney has the option of how many hours they want to work. I have attorneys that work 25 hours a week. I have attorneys that work 50 hours a week. I have some attorneys on an outsource base that work 20 hours a month. But that gives me a really deep bench, and it gives me great expertise. But I've had attorneys that have had children. I've had attorneys who have taken care of aging parents, who then have taken care of, you know, having lost a parent, taking care of the surviving parent. The rule of my firm is if you are on vacation, there's no email, there's no text, and there's no voicemail. If we can't cover you for a week or two, then I haven't built out a sustainable model. So I felt very, very committed to that. To your point, Brian, when I started the firm, I really started the firm because my husband, who comes from former Eastern Bloc, communist country, when he came to the States, he literally got off the plane and was like, this is the land of opportunity. If you cannot make money in this country, I don't know. Because where he came from, Albania, which was one of the poorest, or actually the poorest of the former Soviet Eastern Bloc countries, if you come to this country and you have the ability to work, the opportunity really is endless. So when I'm going through these ideas about building an ideal firm for attorneys to work in, as well as what I hoped was answering a business need in a market that I had not seen the law, I had not seen firms grow an outsourced general counsel model, he was the person who said, and he has built five different companies. I mean, he builds them and flips them, and, you know, so I couldn't say to him, you don't understand, you don't get it,
because he got it.
He got it, and yes, he did it, and he did it successfully. So, you know, what he did is he pushed me to build a model that I can get up and leave, and I can be gone for months at a time overseas.
Talk about the first time when he said, hey,
I will.
We're going to go over to Greece for 3 months and take the kids.
Exactly.
And you just started you were about a year and a half, two years into your practice.
And we got about 50 seconds left for this. So we'll carry this on to the next segment too.
Perfect.
Give us a teaser.
I'll give you the short. Yes. So he sought asylum in Greece and then came to the States after that. So he spent about 2 years in Greece, which is the land of milk and honey. I mean, it's the most beautiful. I've traveled all over, and it's just phenomenally beautiful. So he says to me, it's spring, and he's like, well, I think we need to go to Greece for the summer. And I look at him, I said, well, we can't. What are you talking about? I just started a firm a year and a half ago. You can't do that. Those are the rules. He's like, what rules? I don't have any rules in my world. So we had a lively discussion, otherwise probably called an argument, about whether or not that was going to be viable.
I like how you phrase that.
Yeah, exactly.
A lively discussion, otherwise called an argument.
Yeah. So 2.5 years later, I'll tell you how.
That's going to be fun. We're going to catch up with that here after the break. You're listening to Grill Me. Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show. I'm your host, Jason Grill. Thanks for listening today. You connect with me on Twitter at Jason Grill. Again, we're with Brian Sarf. He's a guest host and contributor to the Grill Nation Show. And Pascal Hinn, who is an awesome lawyer here in Kansas City. Her website is phbusinesslaw.com. You were talking about a story about your husband in Greece and all the great things that he kind of changed your mindset.
Absolutely.
After
the lively discussion.
Exactly. Well, and
so
another,
what happened then? How did that work out?
So just to give you context, we kind of joke because my husband's from Albania, and the way I describe Albanians, they're like Italians, only louder.
Is that possible?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So what we joke, we often have a conversation where I'll say, well, you know, I don't mean to argue with you. And he's like, what do you mean argument? He's like, this is just a discussion. We're just talking. So going back to the story, you know, we sat down and he's like, well, you know, this summer, I think we need to take the kids to Greece. They're at an age. This was about 3 years ago. About 3 years ago. He's like, we need to take the kids to Greece. And I think we should spend the summer there. And, you know, I told him, I said, are you crazy? I said, I just started a firm. I'm busting my butt. I'm working 100 hours a week, try to build a client base. If I leave, the whole thing is going to implode. He said, one, no, it won't. You'll be, you know, if you want, this is a marathon, not a sprint. If you want to run this and do it well, you are going to have to learn to get some balance, and you're going to have to set aside time, and you're going to have to make this a priority, because otherwise you're going to wake up like most Americans, and you're going to be 65, and your kids aren't going to come home anymore because you haven't spent any time with them. You're not going to be healthy, and you're frankly not going to be very happy. So you don't have to do it this way. So that took, we discussed that for a long time. And he said, what happens? You lose half your clients, grow another half. You know, we're in a situation where we can afford to do this. So
that's a big paradigm shift for you.
It was a huge paradigm shift, because not only growing up in the Midwest with good Midwestern work ethic.
Work harder than the other guy or gal, and you'll be successful, right? I'll grow up like that.
Absolutely. You just overwork everybody. You know, you outwork everybody. But there's this idea that time off is wasted time, and that if you don't run ahead of the pack constantly, that you're going to get behind. Mm-hmm. What I had to learn, and what has proven to be true, is if you do not take time, you cannot pace. I mean, it's just like running. If you don't pace and you don't know how to have some balance, you will burn out, or you won't optimize your abilities. So we, in fact, got on a plane and we spent 3 months in Greece, on an island on the west, where we ended up buying property because it was amazing. And my kids were there, and that, you know, they were school age. They spent 3 months in Greece, and we traveled all over. We basically lived there, which changes another whole paradigm shift, because, you know, my kids were playing soccer with the kids in the village. Didn't have any Greek, but they learned to get along.
They need soccer.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was your shift at the end of the summer?
You know, it was
looking back.
A number of things. One, there really are no rules. You can create whatever you want.
You live by the rules you set.
Absolutely. And if you take on somebody else's rules, then you're going to be living their life. So if your goal is to have 3 months out of the year where you live in a foreign country, then you've got to build out a business that allows you to do it. What I learned was it's not easy, because I would travel home about every 3 weeks. I call it spinning the plates. I would fly in on Sunday night. I would start Monday morning at 8 a.m. and I would do 4 days of nonstop 12-hour days. I'd make sure I touched to Brian's point, we were talking during the break about referral partners. You know, I made sure that I connected with everybody who was critical to the firm. I made sure my attorneys were good. I made sure basically my house was in order. Everybody had me when they needed me. The other thing I did, I was very structured about access to me. Mm-hmm. Because I literally have pictures where I'm on the beach with a laptop. Mm-hmm.
I got an email from you while you were there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I go, oh, this is fantastic.
Like,
we're going to talk
office.
More about this.
Yeah. Here's my office. And I got, you know, I've got the sea behind me.
And you didn't lose half your clients, did you?
I didn't. As a matter of fact,
you probably grew your practice.
I doubled my clients. I had some of the best months. And my husband said, do you see? And I said, yeah, I get it. Because I came back and I was on fire. And I also I was forced to build a structure that was sustainable without me being there in the office 12 hours a day. As long as I was disciplined about being, you know, connectivity and being available when needed, I also delegated decisions, critical decisions, to my team, so they didn't have to sit and wait for me. And I said, I trust your judgment more, you know, so you make a decision. I would rather have you make a decision and possibly disagree with what you did than to not make a decision within these parameters. Mm-hmm. So you empower people to make decisions. You give authority.
Huge.
And then at the end of the day, you make sure people can get to you when they need to. And then but you also give people direction. You can't just throw them out there and then second guess what they've done.
Well, your strategic partner network is pretty incredible. And that's where you built that from the beginning when you came out running and going. And that's how we originally met.
Yep.
was when you were building your business network.
Yep, absolutely.
And talk about how you built that network and, sure. and what you do today to nurture it and keep it running, because that is the lifeblood of a lot of service businesses, is their strategic network. And, you know, and frankly, any business, it's their absolutely. Network that refers people there.
You know, I think your core values, I believe that you will attract and you should serve and do business with people who have core values that are similar to your own. So one of my philosophies is you always give, you know, kind of the go-giver, you know, that idea that if you are generous, if you are committed to serving others, you will align with and do business with people who have like values. And that's why, you know, Brian, you and I get along so well, because I have seen how you serve your clients. I have seen the types of people with the ethics and the morals and the commitment to doing the right thing. It's easy to do business with people like that. You know, if you send me somebody and they're in need, we're going to make sure they get served and we're going to make sure they have a good experience. And if they don't, I want to hear about it because we'll fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, community service is a part of that. It is a great privilege to be an entrepreneur, but it's also a great privilege to be a professional and live in an affluent country. So when building out a referral network, I always look for people who have a similar service-minded attitude about life. I look for positivity. I look for people who are committed to treating others well. And but also very entrepreneurial. The referral partners who I align with best are those people who understand that I want to send business to you, but you are also going to reciprocate and send business to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it easy.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of having 100 people that I am chasing, I might have 12 key partners. And, you know, we refer to each other because I trust you're going to treat people well and have seen that you do so. So that has been my philosophy.
I think that's the biggest fear of entrepreneurs on referring each other, is that you're worried about your reputation.
Absolutely.
Because who you refer somebody to, it's an extension of your business and your brand and your reputation.
Absolutely.
And you're worried about the follow-up and the communication. And, you know, is my client just going to call back and be upset and those things? And when you build a strong partnership with a tight-knit group like you have, you know, you're part of our referral group called Top of the Torch that we've built at True, of our close strategic partners we work with. Really, really drives the lifeblood of the business. And love having you here today. I know we're coming to the end of the show, and I just love to have a time to visit with you and say hello and introduce you to the rest of Kansas City that hasn't met you already.
I appreciate it very, very much.
We've enjoyed having you on the show today. Pascal Hinn, thank you so much. Brian Sarf, True Wealth.
Yes, sir.
RetireWithTrue.com. Yep. Thanks for always bringing on great guests. And I've been typing down notes to promote the show, but also to for myself.
Very good.
It's been a great hour. I appreciate both you guys coming in. Absolutely. Brian, obviously appreciate your partnership with the show.
Yes, sir. And next month, we have penciled in Lamar Hunt Jr.
Oh, great.
So here we go.
Here we go. We're off and
very
rolling
good.
Here. I love it. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much, both of you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Grill Nation show. We'll see you again next week. Take care.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.